Let's talk with Pippa Jones.
Now, my newspaper review is usually at the beginning of the programme, but today it's the other way around, and that's why I've got now investigative journalist, broadcaster, former BBC journalist Tony Gosling on the line, joining us to look at the news, actually, which is less likely to be in the papers. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Pippa.
Very good morning to you. Now then, we're going to start with what is really a travesty, and that is the lack of coverage by the British media about the brilliant, brilliant win by Ken Loach for his film I, Daniel Blake.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that the British winning the Palme d'Or at Cannes is not news? Now, you know, the thing is, this, I mean, of course it should be, but I think this, to me, is an absolute lightning rod story as to how much censorship is going on in Britain at the moment. You know, because this would normally be everywhere. Clips of it would be on the television over a couple of days. We should be hearing it on our radio, seeing it in our newspapers. Well, there is a little bit of coverage of it in the newspapers, to be fair. But, I mean, Britain has basically taken the most prestigious award in the whole of the arts in the world this year, and yet no one seems to be interested, certainly in the broadcast media, about covering it. Now, it's because of the subject matter of the film, which is this absolutely hideous program of sanctions that's being dished out in our job centres across the country to some of the most vulnerable people in society, people who are mentally ill, some of them, some disabled, but the majority of them are just simply poor people who are struggling desperately to make ends meet, going to job interviews, being turned down again and again because they're, you know, their circumstances are difficult. They're not, maybe they're not particularly highly skilled. They're being constantly undercut in trying to get jobs by a wave of migration, people who are prepared to work for very, very little, often because, you know, their living circumstances are, they manage to survive more cheaply or whatever. But it's looking at, the film is looking at the awful effect that these sanctions have had on those people. Now, I did an article a couple of years ago, which was, I was very happy to see, was taken up by the campaign Liberty, that what used to be the National Council for Civil Liberties, yeah, and put in a prominent place on their website, which was looking at the law as regards actually taking away people's the basic things that people need to sustain themselves, for example, food, toiletries, you know, very basic stuff, things like basic stuff like toilet paper, people not having any money to buy the stuff, having to go into pubs and steal it, this kind of thing. And that article was, the headline was around the idea, look, we're now treating the poor worse than animals, because if you look at the legislation around animal welfare and the way we're allowed to treat animals, we're not allowed to treat animals like this. We're not allowed to take away their food supplies. We're not allowed to, take away their shelter, which is happening in a lot of places. We're with people just simply running out of money completely and getting evicted from their homes. We've seen a massive leap in evictions. So that's why this film is not being publicised. It's because it's the wrong story, and it shows up the hideous cruelty and viciousness of what was initially the coalition government, but now it's the Conservative government, really laying into the people who are least able to defend themselves in society. And that is an absolutely as important message now as Ken Loach's Kathy Come Home was back in the 1960s. Yeah.
And Tony, interesting as well that here we have this wonderful piece of what is essentially sort of documentary literature by Ken Loach about the issues that you've just mentioned, and yet the same media who isn't giving it much coverage in terms of having just won the prize are the media who will happily screen this number of different programmes that there are demonising the poor or almost ridiculing the poor.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen this sort of benefit street. There's one on at the moment. I'm not sure if you can pick this stuff up over there, but it's called How to Get a Council House. Oh, I mean, you know, this is just the lowest of the low in terms of programming, I mean, it's just looking at the sort of seamy underbelly of society, but actually in a kind of patronising way. There was back in the 1960s, I think, or maybe the 70s, there was a program on which was a spoof called The Year of the Sex Olympics, and I think you can still get it on DVD. It's kind of weird but hilarious at the same time, and it's people at the time in the golden age of television writing a kind of dystopia program for the kind of Orwellian future, nightmare future that they were envisaging, and it was about really the total abuse of television as a kind of infotainment and having actually no kind of cultural merit whatsoever. That was a kind of dystopic future they were looking at, you know. But actually that's what's happened is, you know, you can flick around the Freeview channels these days and there's just virtually nothing whatsoever of any kind of cultural content worth watching, any kind of, you know, sort of stimulating, interesting, educational. It's just garbage. And I mean, this is just another way in which Britain, I mean, there's lots of other ways we've done it. It seems to have mimicked the US kind of propaganda model where the people who are making decisions about what's in our national media have no real interest in sort of stimulating, educating, really entertaining the population. They're there for other reasons, and they're there to sort of occupy that space rather than to make sure it serves the interests of the public.
We're relating there to Ken Loach's film, which is essentially an attack on austerity or a criticism of austerity and how it affects people. Something that has been happening over the last 24 hours, which again isn't being covered much in the MSM, is that there have been significant protests in Brussels, 60,000 people taking to the streets protesting against austerity.
Well, yeah, there's big protests going on in France, actually, over the last couple of weeks. We've seen, I mean, actually, to be fair, on the bulletins this morning here in Britain, they finally got round to saying, oh, well, actually, almost all the refineries in oil refineries in France have been closed down. Now, this is many days into the protest. I mean, obviously, people in France who are trying to get fuel for their cars have been noticing this for quite a while now. I guess that the pressure has just been building for them. It's a kind of resentful coverage of a story which has been rumbling for days and days in France. And so finally, they've got around to mentioning it.
And these are protests, the closing of these refineries and fuel depots is in protests at the French government's intended labour laws, new labour laws.
Well, yeah, it's all to do with job security. Now, look, you know, one of those things that I think is absolutely basic in any kind of successful country economy is that there's a reasonably level playing field between employer and employee. So, I mean, we know this in the media industry, I suppose, as much as anyone else. And also, actually, the oil industry was one of the first to get rid of these kind of basic guarantees that, you know, there's going to be a job for you in a week's time. There was a horrendous situation, for example, the London docks, when they were big between the wars and in the 1950s and 60s, of people turning up for work each day and then being hired by the day because there was such a good supply of, you know, kind of unskilled labour to do that sort of work. And over the years, that there's been a lot of agitation by the union, strikes, this sort of thing, to say, well, look, hang on a minute. You know, we want to be able to turn up for work every day, and we want to get some work. We don't want a particular activist to be able to be singled out, as we've seen recently in the blacklisting of construction workers. And we want some basic rights, things like holidays and this kind of thing. So this should be really basic stuff, but it's been being eroded. Particularly since 2010, by changes to trade union law that they're being proposed at the moment, horrendous to do with. They've got to have a really intricate ballots in order to say yes. Everyone agrees on this. Whereas in the old days, of course, they all used to stick their hands up and you look, you know, okay, there's a big majority for that strike. We're out, you know. And that relationship has been eroded over the years because we've had big business running things. And part of that, of course, ties into the European Union. And the EU has been, making sure that big business does very well. Now, I wouldn't say I mean, there is actually guarantees in some of EU legislation for employees, but the Conservatives have eroded, and the right wing in Britain and the coalition government have eroded those as well, even more than the EU. So, you know, this is not just in Britain. This has been happening. It's in all over the continent, and particularly the, you know, unskilled, cheap migrant labour has been an absolute godsend for big multinational corporations. They love having cheap labour, as cheap as possible, and you know that's totally eroded, you know, what has been effectively decades or even centuries of struggle to get decent paying conditions, you know, for ordinary people here in Britain. So a massively as I mentioned, the blacklisting as well. That has gone. It's a bit like Hillsborough, Pippa. Okay, so we've now got the truth about what these construction companies like Kier, etc., have been doing, McAlpine's, in finding people who have been bringing up health and safety issues. For example, you know, say a lift isn't working properly and might kill somebody, bringing that up, and then getting the sack and never being able to work again. Telling people what their rights are, being a trade union representative at work, getting the sack and never being able to work again. You know, this kind of attitude, I'm afraid, has been allowed to happen, but there's been no punishment for it. Like Hillsborough, we've got the truth. We now know what's been happening, but nobody that's been doing this criminal activity has been taken to court by the police, the Crown Prosecution Service. Certainly nobody's been jailed for it. And that doesn't mean we're not delivering any justice. What we're doing is a kind of even worse in a way is when you tell people what's been going on, and yet it's a bit like Tony Blair, isn't it? You tell everyone what's been going on with Tony Blair, and yet he's still walking around. Oh, gosh, there's Tony Blair walking down the street. Look, you know, and there's been no punishment for it. Yeah. This is a lawless country.
And he's still wheeled out to make comments on significant occurrences in global politics. Well, it's just beyond belief.
It is. Well, it's funny, actually, isn't it? Because I think everything that Tony Blair pops up and talks about, people know to think the opposite. It's a bit like whatever our myths were about the way the Soviet Union operated, where people would kind of read between the lines the whole time. And that's kind of what happened in the run-up to the mayor election as well, with all this anti-Semitism, so-called anti-Semitism scandal, is that Londoners just simply took one look at it and voted the opposite way.
Yeah. Let's move on, Tony, because we have a little bit of time left, but this is quite a big topic. This is something that you have been and still are very involved in, very knowledgeable about, and we're just about to welcome the 64th annual Globalist Bilderberg Conference in Dresden this time in the Kempinski Hotel. On June the 9th it starts.
Well, it's a giant palace, actually. And anyway, it was bombed out during the war, where the Bilderbergs are meeting, and it was, I think, restored. Finally, opened as a 5-star hotel in about 1995. But yes, it's in Dresden, which is the old East Germany, this year. And for your listeners that don't know much about the Bilderberg conferences, this is the, I think, main event of the year, which people are not being told about, which influences our future. I mean, effectively, what you've got is the bankers, royalty, big business, big media, any kind of big corporation meeting up with politicians in secret, and right across the NATO countries. Those politicians are drawn from almost. There's one or two people there from outside, but only from kind of inside Europe. So, for example, you might find people from Norway there and Switzerland who aren't actually in NATO. So, look, these meetings, over the years, I've had a good look at them. That what they do is they seem to be kind of have what I call a magic wand of power. So somebody will go along to a Bilderberg conference who's an up-and-coming politician, and the next year suddenly they'll become leader of the opposition or prime minister of the country. So they seem to be sort of talent spotters. And the question is, who is choosing who? Is the public choosing these individuals, or are Bilderberg choosing them to run our countries? You know, because the Bilderbergs are kind of it's almost, you could see it like a kind of horse fair where the Bilderbergers are picking over the fetlocks of the various horses on offer, you know, that they want to run the world or run the Europe, you know, run NATO. The thing that really got my interest and I suppose annoyed me most about this was, having worked in London as a journalist and on all sorts of national and international stories, and then found that there were these people. I discovered someone came and told me about them. It was in 1996, I think. I was really annoyed. I'd never heard of them. And some journalists have and some haven't, but a lot of the media owners have heard of them because they go. But when they walk into the conference hall, they have absolutely sworn themselves to secrecy. So they won't be mentioning the fact that the conference is taking place. They won't be attributing anything that they learn at the conference to anybody at the conference. So it's as if this is kind of a conference that doesn't happen to the mainstream media people that go. And I'm talking here about News International, the BBC, The Economist magazine always send a couple of people to these, but you never see the Bilderberg actually really written about in a frank and honest way. They're not reporting for us. They're going to get the gen on what the plan is for the next few years. So that's essentially Bilderberg. But the thing that really annoyed me about it, 120 of the most rich and powerful people in Europe and royalty all mingling together in a little love fest. It is the fact that for the first 20 years, this conference was chaired by a former SS officer, a guy who tried initially to deny that he'd been in the SS, but it was then later proven that he had. This is Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. He was a German aristocrat that married into the Dutch royal family just before the Second World War.
Grandfather of the king now, no?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. In Holland, Bernhard is known much better because there are books out about him, occasional TV programs in Dutch, which no one else can understand pretty much, apart from the Germans, maybe. He's known now pretty much as a traitor during the war. And yet he was involved intimately in Operation Market Garden. That is a Bridge Too Far film, which was Montgomery's attempt to liberate Holland. And it looks pretty clear now that he was actually working for the Nazis during that operation when he was peering over Montgomery's shoulder. But then in 1975, that's 20 years after the conference started, the Bilderberg had started, good old Bernhard was found to have been paid £1 million bribe by Lockheed to force the Dutch Air Force to buy Lockheed Starfighter aircraft, which were terrible aircraft, by the way. Anyway, so he was discredited and embarrassed and forced out. But it was his attempt to cover up his Nazi past, and an SS officer in the most Nazified... I mean, he was one of the first people to join the SS back in the 30s, you know. So this guy was definitely not trustworthy. And here he is chairing this meeting for 20 years. And the reason I think that it started, it gets its name from the Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek in Holland, where the first meeting took place, is because 10 years before that first meeting, there was an absolute massacre of the British airborne in the very same spot, actually in exactly where that hotel was. 10 years before, there was a massacre of British airborne forces, which it looks like Bernhard was involved in betraying them. And that was a kind of an in-joke for Nazis. You know, hey, look, you know, this is where we got the Brits. And that's where they decided the exact same spot to found these conferences. So, I mean, they're still going to this day. This particular one in Dresden, I'm booked my tickets. I'm hoping, I'm staying in a hotel nearby. And I'm happy to cover it for you if you want, Pippa, from there. But
I'll take you up on that.
This one is going to be interesting. It's getting closer and closer to Germany over the last few years, Austria and Denmark and now Germany. And I've never seen anything like it, because this time we're told this is not a political meeting, no decisions are made, etc. But you know what? We've got the whole of the apex of the German government going. The top six ministers are going. Angela Merkel is going, her vice chancellor, her defense minister, her foreign minister, her equivalent of the Chancellor of Exchequer, finance minister, and they've got their kind of minister without portfolio going too, who does things like covering the secret services for Germany. Now, this is the apex of the German government are going to this conference, and how can they dare tell us that the press and public shouldn't be interested, aren't invited, just go away?
And a very high-ranking German economist has actually suggested that it's impossible to understand that government officials should be allowed to go to this kind of gathering as a matter of principle?
In the US, they've got something called the Logan Act, where they can be politicians, senators, congressmen can be sent to jail for going to such a meeting. The fact is, particularly with the journalists and the politicians, if they go to a meeting where they step into the room, and as they step into the room, they sworn to secrecy, that's absolutely not on.
Yeah.
Because their loyalty is then to their paymasters often. I mean, these are the banksters, let's not forget, who got away with blue murder and, you know, for example, money laundering, false accounting, the 2008 bailout, which was basically the biggest heist in history, robbing the public purse of nearly $1 trillion. So we are now having to pay for their speculative gambling in the casino that so-called went wrong, where they intimidated the politicians around the world to say, well, look, unless you do as we say, we're just going to stop all the cash points tomorrow. That's what happened in 2008. And the politicians caved in, you know, so we're now having to pay for all those previous crimes. And those are the people who are calling the shots in there, the big financial, we're talking about the European Central Bank, the IMF, Goldman Sachs, all these most powerful bankers in the world. They call the shots at these Bilderberg conferences, and on the one hand. And on the other hand, you've got David Rockefeller, the Rockefeller family, the Rockefeller Foundation, which has been responsible for all sorts of attempts to undermine social justice over the years, the Rockefellers have. And then Henry Kissinger, you know, this is the war criminal advisor to Nixon. He was Nixon's head of the State Department, who was responsible for the coup in Chile, which led to the deaths of tens of thousands of innocent people, disappeared, just sort of snatched and bodies found. Many were just found in mass graves. Now, Kissinger was also responsible for the coup in Indonesia. You know, all this stuff is well documented by people like John Pilger, etc. So if you've got the bankers, you've got the warmongers, and the politicians and the press are stepping into the Bilderberg conference and swearing an oath of secrecy, you know, so they won't tell us anything about what's going on in there. I think, you know, the whole world should be watching.
Maintaining a continued dialogue between the elites of the ruling classes on the European and North American continents, that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? And though they're not as such, I understand, sworn to secrecy, but they are bound by convention of their office to pre-agreed positions. I mean, it's very murky, the language that's used to justify what they do.
Well, they just don't want anyone to know about it, really.
That's right.
Why I go on about it the whole time.
Tony, we've got to leave it there. It's 9th of June, is a week on Friday, so I'm going to be speaking to you there. You're going to talk to us live from somewhere outside the conference, because you're not going to be allowed in, are you?
More than happy to. Well, I will ask if they don't mind me giving a speech. I don't know if they will.
If you don't ask, I mean, you don't get.
The nice thing about these, though, over the years, is every year you get a kind of alternative conference of journalists, researchers, writers, agitators,
outside
turn
of the
up,
event,
turn up, and you have a kind of parallel conference, and there's all sorts of fascinating chit chat in hotel bars and things like that. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Fascinating. You can't make this stuff up. Tony, thanks very much. Tony Gosling, journalist, broadcaster, and all round good egg. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Pippa.
Bye bye.
This is TRE.